You were wrong, Judge, all the way back when you ruled against the wrong people for the wrong charges and set an injunction in the first place. Now, Judge Coyle is going to, oh my God, I'm caught. And there are enough of you now. You see, you've been able to be kept out of the courtroom. Don't come down to the court. It may upset the judge.
Let's upset the judge.
Did you notice yesterday you've got, you have such a case. Once again, there's no accuser.
There's some attorney.
Snot-nosed attorney who doesn't even know the case is up there spouting off, throw them in jail, off with their heads. And the only right he has to be in that room is because he's a member of that inner bar. Now, do you want to produce a bunch of Masons in there and say, you have broken your Masonic pledge. I am a Mason and you have done me a wrong deed. Well, you can't do that because you, by accepting your right as a citizen, have denied the Masonic law. So they'll send brother over to cut your gut out, you know, or whatever silly, stupid games they play. So yes, you have the teacher, and as soon as you can arrange it, you get Eustace Mullins out here, I'm telling you, and you get that man, Dave Miller, out here. And you've got a constitutional law center established. Whether they like it around there or not, or if you've been doing it properly or not, you are established, and they've not been able to get you pulled down enough to get rid of them. And I don't care if they call it Ecker Phoenix Center, unlawful rights, whatever. Let them call it anything they want. Well, does this mean that Eckers won't have to go to jail? Oh, my goodness. You should be so lucky as to have that man rule wrong.
Monday's hearing has been vacated.
Oh, shock of the world! Son of a gun. Well, I guess we'll just have to work Monday.
Due to court availability, it's pushed back to the end of March.
I like this story. End of March, I like this story.
This will give you time. You see,
time to do
but all of you be thinking about this. What can you enter with Judge Coyle by Monday when he's given these guys a cutoff time? What can you do to get the judge's eye? By Monday. Because in pro per, the assumption is you're so stupid that you thought he gave you until Monday.
Yeah.
And you're not doing it ex parte because you're going to make very sure your enemies get copies.
Right.
Some of you may have to drive up there just to make sure they get them in time. So, and you put it right up there. This is not ex parte. There's no time like immediately to start, with only one exception. Where does it merit you the most gain? And when you come in there demanding that the judge was wrong way back there, you're going to also pick up the friendship of US&P, because when you get done charging them for what they have miscarried justice to dump adverbially on you, whoever you are. In this instance, it's Ecker. But look what a good time you'll have with the other missing party from this room. They came back and suggested that Ed Young, they named him, Ed Young be given the same penalties. Off with his head, throw him in jail. I mean, that those people at Contact. Do you see, everything they did was unlawful. And I just wanted to get that in before we break for lunch. I think we should break and get back in here with a renewed interest, and somebody can go start typing, because if you're typing it, you're going to get it, aren't you? Let's use it. This is the way you change a world. You don't do it with a machine gun. You do it with the bullets you have. And I repeat, you have an English professor. Let's utilize it. Let's go for it. Let's just take a break. Thank you.
Thank you.
Come in the door now.
Okay.
So go back off there.
Out of every court in the United States, or every judge in the United States, and every lawyer in the United States goes down for treason. The Cat Creek for the Freeman and putting an end to the standoff out there with my procedure. It didn't happen that day, but 30 days later it did happen with my procedure, and that's how the standoff ended, with my technology. Now, I was in Ivy West, brought me over to Honolulu, Hawaii, to do a program. Several hours before I left Hawaii, I faxed the Title 42 suit to the Freeman in Montana. The FBI had an intercept wiretap on the fax, traced the number down, and they got to the house 1 hour after my plane left Honolulu. And the house was raided, everything was taken, and the people within the house were arrested because they thought that they were the people from whom this came. I've had 2 1.5-hour conversations with the FBI and about four and a half hour conversations now with CIA on what it is my procedure does, what it is I am doing, and the whole thing is I'm an English teacher. I am not practicing law in any capacity. I've not broken any laws. I have merely taken and showed people how to write sentence structure and preposition, nouns, and verbs. I mean, it's as simple as that. I use the law as an example. We could talk about how to build a tractor, how to do welding technology. I'm well-versed in multiple subjects. I taught college for 3 years. I'm just an English teacher, folks. Just because I take the English words and that and I put them into meaningful definitions that we heard here today, doesn't mean I've broken any law, otherwise we're going to have to shut down every English teacher in the United States and get rid of all of our dictionaries and everything. So, when I went out to Montana, I spent a week in Cat Creek teaching the Freeman, there was 8 of them, the procedure on how to read the law, how to understand the nouns, verbs, and prepositions. And from that, Leroy Schweitzer, Dan Peterson, and Mr. Clark constructed their Title 42 actions, and then also had the format for the other 24 defendants that were up at the farm. Now, while I was out there that first day, and at the United States, or the FBI, or somebody, whoever it was, moved 2 155 howitzers, land-based howitzers, into a gravel pit 7 miles south of the Freeman camp. And this was witnessed by patriots up in the area. They cleared out an area 5 miles wide from where the howitzers were, so if they did use them, the flash and the concussion would not be heard. It would just be no more than distant thunder. 155 howitzer is about nine, throws a shell 9 inches by 28, puts a hole in the ground about 50 feet wide and 30 feet deep. And it goes 20 miles up in the air, and it comes down nice and quiet. And if the whole farm blew up, well, no witness, no crime. Fortunately, that never happened, because just last week, Charlie Duke got on television, and he made the statement that there was between 5 and 10 million patriots in the United States ready to go to war in the event the Freeman were killed. There was another factor. The land that the Freeman are on is under an old Indian treaty. That's why they couldn't trespass on that land. It was a foreign country. And that was a secret that was kept and never released to the public. The 80th day of the standoff, my Canton, Ohio tapes were taken into the Freeman. And they played the tapes for the Freeman. Leroy Schweitzer and Clark took the tapes in, and he showed them what the Title 42 looks like, and at which time they surrendered to it, because they identified with the remedy. You can't break the law to enforce the law, And the procedure outlined what they had to do on paper as well as verbally to be found innocent and to prove that that what had happened to them was a fraud. And when it went to court on July 16th, they did have a common law court, and Burns was the judge, and all the charges against the Freeman was dismissed. And they were promptly taken back to jail as political prisoners and held there, and they still are held there, because they won't sign a statement that says they will not talk about the bank fraud in the United States. Because of their highly exposed media, in other words, upon releasing them, you'd have every news network in the United States there, and they have the documentation to certify the bank fraud in the United States, that the banks are doing no more than taking our sweat equity of the future and loaning it to us at 9% interest. They're not creating money.
Creating credits.
Well, yes, they're creating credits, but they're doing it through contracts, which means it has not existed. It doesn't exist, therefore, they haven't created it yet. It will always be in the future, not in the present. In other words, the almighty dollar that we have, this is being held in our hands. So this is present today. The government can create a present.
For those folks out in tape land, there's a portion of this film is being repeated, and we're checking to find out if we can fast forward past that.
Income tax. 16th Amendment says all corporations will pay income tax, right? And what's the definition? Hey, what's the definition of a corporation? Well, definition of corporation deals with a person. That's correct. But the definition of a corporation is when two or more people come together to solve a legal problem, or if two or more people come together for commerce. Right? So,
that one here someplace.
We're going to take the good old American check. Okay? Now the check, it's got the name of the bank down here. It's got my name on top. We've got two now under contract UCC 3-501. It says you must have the name and address of the person on a piece of paper to make a contract. So we've got two people. You must have two signatures. The signature goes here in the bottom, and one goes on the back, going to endorse the check. Then we got to have an amount. That initiates the commerce part. And the soul writes it out. So this piece of paper is the corporation. By definition, this piece of paper is the corporation. So now you go and you work at your job. Like I worked at A.L. Smith. I belong to a union. And when I got my paycheck at the end of the week, that paycheck had the name of A.L. Smith on there, and it had myself on there. Now, on that check, it's got gross pay, $1,000. Federal government gets $200. State government gets $100. Social Security gets $100. And I get $600 sweat equity. Now, the law says it can't be taxed twice on the same amount of money, correct? So what happens is, the piece of paper is the corporation. The piece of paper corporation pays the state and federal taxes. The contract, the government has a contract with the corporation because the corporation pays taxes. The corporation then issues you a check, and the piece of paper corporation pays taxes that the corporation pays out and pays it to them. And how are you joined to this? You signed up with this union or with this corporation. You signed your employment contract. It says right on there, you have the right to review our articles of incorporation. Might be as big as the phone book, 1,000 pages. But that contract ties you to the corporate contract, which ties you to the tax contract, which ties you to the 16th Amendment. Corporations pay taxes. So the piece of paper pays the taxes, not you. The $600 is your sweat equity, and you can put it, do anything you want with it. You can burn it, save it, go out and buy whatever you want with it. No one's going to bother you. So lo and behold, the individual says, I am a human entity. I am not a corporation. I want it all. So you take the $200 federal and the $100 state and you take it over and you put it in sweat equity. Everybody knows that everybody's got to pay Social Security, so that's a gift. We'll just leave that lay there. So lo and behold, 36 months go by, and the IRS goes, hey, where did the taxes go on that piece of paper corporation? The corporation didn't pay its taxes under the 16th Amendment. Who signed the contract? Who was part of the contract? Who's part of the corporation piece of contract? Well, there's a signature on the back of the check that signed for that $300. 300 times 36 is $100,000. Wait, no, this time it was 100. $100,000. So the IRS comes back and says, well, we want $100,000 in taxes. You've embezzled it off of the corporation. You're saying, no, it's my money. I earned it. I get sweat equity. Sorry. You contracted. When you put your name on that document, you took responsibility for the taxes of the corporation, and now you've embezzled it and spent it. You bought yourself a house. You spent $100,000 on a house. That tax money that you put in the house belongs to us. We're going to come in there and we're going to seize that tax money back because you embezzled it. And besides that, income tax evasion carries 5 years and so does embezzlement. That carries 10 years. That's why you get 10 years in prison for income tax evasion.
So what?
Because you extorted the money from the piece of paper corporation. And now you can't, you don't have enough money to pay it back, so you go to jail for it.
So since it says that you have the right to look at the articles of the corporation...
People are lazy.
That contract's not all important because they didn't...
They gave you the operation. They gave you the opportunity. The fact that you didn't want to take the initiative and go do it, ignorance of the law is no excuse. They gave you this right there. It's public record. Open Records Act. The law provides for it. And the people don't want to do any more than they have to.
Well, how about if the beginning of the contract is fraud in itself? Like the 16th
in other words,
Amendment.
Well, the 16th Amendment was it was never ratified, but it was written in 1913, I believe it was, right? Okay.
But it was never properly ratified, so therefore it's a fraud in the beginning.
Right. But then you go up there and you stand and say, I want my constitutional rights, and the Constitution includes the 16th Amendment. Well, I think putting it on a piece of paper after you've done the work in that, they're indirectly correcting it from you, and you are signing a contract to take that responsibility. And when you've done it for 30 years, you've signed that contract over and over and over and over and over again.
How do you reconcile that?
And it's just like your MasterCard. When you sign, every time you initiate and activate that MasterCard, you are reassigning that contract. Every time you sign that check, you re-sign and reaffirm the contract, and any modifications that the corporation makes to its articles of incorporation or the government forces upon the articles of incorporation, you always have that opportunity to go back there and read and study and learn this here where all the changes take place. And then you have the choice, freedom of choice, to quit and go out and pick stones in the field for the farmer and get paid in silver, which is tax-free, or continue to work your lathe, or do your job, drive your forklift, whatever it is you do, and get your big bucks and kick back with your coffee, bacon, donuts and live in your nice big house. It all comes down to we're going to give you enough candy so that you don't cause us any trouble. And you're going to enjoy, you're going to like your Sunday football and your case of beer alongside you and your potato chips and pretzels and whatever. We're going to pacify you. You won't be working there if you don't sign an employment agreement. But if your boss is a patriot and one is independent and has no contract with the IRS, and he has some way of getting his income without checks, without creating checks, and dealing with silver and pays you in silver, then the IRS can stand there and watch you get paid in silver and just say, why can't I collect this? Because it's in cash and you're sweat equity. There's no contract to create a corporation. But the government, in order to exist where the corporation is going to pay any kind of money, you know, you're restricted. So you take 50% of what they give you, and it's probably more than 100% of what you're going to get if you were doing something else. Right? Yes?
A friend of mine was running for governor in Hawaii, and he went to pay his fees in silver and refused him. So he took him pay everything off in petty fees. Just went to dump pennies to fit. And they had to take it there and got thousands and thousands of pennies.
Why would they refuse the silver? It's legal tender. It's the only legal tender.
They don't know that.
You want to know something? When I went to the Internal Revenue Service, when I went to Washington, D.C. to file my writ of error, I offered to pay in paper money. They said, no, we can't accept this. We only take checks, which are sweat equity. Guarantees. Your money's no good. It's not backed by anything. That was interesting. Yes?
Well, IRS hasn't been able to take Federal Reserve notes since March of 1973, I believe.
In payment for your taxes?
Yeah.
You only accept checks because your checks are guaranteed sweat equity contracts that are corporate.
If you don't endorse the check, deposit
it to
your bank, and they clear it.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
It's a fraudulent document.
By who?
Huh?
By who? By the bank, or?
By you. You committed a fraud because you didn't complete the transaction. Just like if you write UCC 1-207. Now, we have a patriot dentist. He was practicing 26 years, and his license came up for renewal. He got in with the Bureau Society, went to a couple meetings and that, and they convinced him to check himself out of the system. So he revoked his driver's license and revoked his registration. And he also wrote 1-207 behind his signature when he signed his application for his dentistry for the next 3 years. 3 years later, they come along and they say, you don't have a license to practice medicine in the state of Missouri. 90 days in jail. So he files a Title 42 against them. You know what? They're correct. He didn't sign his license to practice medicine. Even though he's in jail, his Title 42, they've been trying to kill him. Police went down to the jail, and they kicked him down a set of concrete steps and told him there's a lot of shallow graves in the basement of this prison. He says, and they got one of them with your name on it. They beat him up pretty good. They put him in a solitary confinement in 50-degree weather, or they keep it cold down there, starting naked. Tried to chill him down in pneumonia. And I haven't heard from him about a week now, so they got him in solitary confinement. But that was the sheriff coming into the jail. Not the jailers doing it, but the sheriff that he had named in the Title 42 that took action against him. He was illegally incarcerated because they put him through an admiralty court. And that's why this activity in front of the Supreme Court, I've gotten 1,000 calls to go ahead and handle people's cases, to show them how to write their cases. I'm one man, and I don't have the physical time to correct everybody's mistakes. However, to do one of these in front of the Supreme Court and show the treason, the corruption, the extortion that's going on, and to verify it with statute definition and make the Supreme Court pull all the flags down in the United States in order to review of all the cases of the people alive that have been illegally placed in jail because there was no will of intent contract of disclosure before they walked through the bar, nullifying everything that took place in the bar. And that means 90% of everybody that's in jail today, and I don't care what the subject matter is, they're illegally. They're all political prisoners. But they get $24 an hour to hire an asphalt company to spread asphalt, but we can do it and get the prisoners to do it for 8 cents an hour.
Yep.
And the corporations own the jail.
Yep.
Good business. That's why everybody's getting into the road gang stuff and putting everybody in jail. Up in Wisconsin, we just opened a new jail up in there.
What about
you? Non-jailable offenses. Right. The other thing is, the nation of Hawaii, 97% of all blood Hawaiian, over 25% are in prison. Genocide. You get a traffic ticket, 5 years. Broken taillight, 5 years. Broken headlight, 5 years. Disorderly conduct, 10, 15 years. We had one of the chiefs out there in the nation of Hawaii. I met with him because his son, he's a coin dealer, sold some coins to a lady. She was then flying back to New York, where she lived, stopped at a coin shop at Denver International Airport and wanted to sell the coins. Well, he only offered her 20 cents on a dollar. She, this is normal. I mean, if I went out and bought silver, which is at 5 cents an ounce, I'll pay 7 cents for a silver silver delivery. But when I take it back to sell it, I'll get $3 for it, or maybe $4. But because she could not receive the exact amount of money, she said she was frauded, that he had committed a counterfeit against her. So the U.S. Marshals went out there, picked the kid up, they held a mock trial and sentenced him to 35 years in jail. He owned 6,000 acres of prime Hawaiian land. They wanted his land. Now they've seized the land. The father is in partnership with it. So they went to father as a co-conspirator for the sale of the two coins and want to put him in jail for 20 years because under the allodial title rules, you have to be off the land for 20 years in order to seize control of it. So the international bankers or whoever it is that wants this land, the government, has to jail both of them for a 20-year period so that they are physically off the land in order to make it free for settlement and they can declare it under, make a state park out of it. So, now, to expand upon the Hawaii situation, in 1848, King Kamehameha had a lot of, he made all the lands in Hawaii allodial. And he set certain tracts of land over for the Americans, for the Chinese, for the Japanese, and for the Filipinos, because these were the majority people that were living there. In 1848, when he did this, the sugarcane people came over there and said to the Hawaiian people, well, we are going to lease the land from you. We are going to call you a person, Joe Smith, uppercase nom de guerre, and we're going to enter into this contract. It's going to be a 20-year contract. We're going to pay a real nice lease on this thing. We're also going to, after they signed the contracts and the people moved off the land, they said, well, we got nobody here to work the land but the Hawaiians. So let's put the Hawaiians back to work on the land. So they paid them good wages to work the land. 20 years and a day later, they said, the Hawaiian people have got all this money and they want to figure, well, I kick back and retire now on my land. Sure, came people say, you don't own the land, we do. You've been off the land for 20 years. You left the land, so now we've got it. How can that be? I've been here working the whole land. No. You've been off the land. You've been dead. You died 20 years ago. And they're saying, well, what do you mean I died? They said, well, you're dead. You're off the land, and that's it. And so he took it to court, and the judge upheld the decision. So this went on, this battle from 1848, from 1868, all the way up to King Kamehameha said, you've got to be off the land for 20 years to make it free for settlement. That was the law. So from 1868 till 1920, there was a battle going on out there in Hawaiian Islands between the nation of Hawaii and the sugarcane people. It was in court constantly. Couldn't make it go away. So in 1920, the Hawaiian people were given a deal called the Hawaiian Homelands Act. For $1 a year, we will give you housing in all the free water you want. So what they did is they said, this person, Joe Smith, uppercase nom de guerre, hereby pays $1 a year, make it an equity contract, and 1959 rolls around. By 1939, every Hawaiian in Hawaii signs a contract and is living under government $1 a year. Wow, we got a free lunch, folks. So 1959 comes around, the United States government declares there are no living Hawaiians left in Hawaii. We now seize the island for statehood. Hawaiian nation goes, what do you mean? We're here, we're alive. He says, nope, you're all dead. What happened? They put their name in uppercase nom de guerre. They killed them on paper. I was brought over to Hawaii by Ivy West. I was given gave a presentation to the people there. Well, the nation of Hawaii came to the seminar, as fate would have it. They heard about my radio broadcast on my procedure, and they thought there was enough validity there to crack the contract of the United States government, written from 1948 all the way to 1995. So they paid for RJ and I to fly over to Maui. Upon getting to Maui, RJ went for the car. And a very neat thing happened next. I sat down at the park bench next to the road, and a female sparrow flew down out of the tree and landed on a bush in front of me. And I put my finger out, and the thing jumped over on my finger. For the next 2.5 hours, I walked around with a wild female sparrow on my finger. Now, the Hawaiian people are very superstitious and very religious, and they said this was good karma. This guy's got something that the rest of us don't have. And we went, that bird sat on my finger for a 5-mile car ride. Didn't fly away, wasn't just fluttering and chirping away. We got over to Oliver's house, and there was 12 people there, and we had a meeting, and we presented our presentation the whole time that bird sat on my finger chirping away. And then it started raining outside. It was like 2.5 hours here. The bird was thirsty, so I took it outside and let it go on the tree limb. And it didn't fly away. It just sat there. I went back in. We completed our discussion. Then they gave me the contract, the Hawaiian Homeland contract that they were presented, and they wanted to evict these people for breach of contract. Upon reading it all over, I said, well, everything seems to be quite well, you know, in order here. You guys signed this thing, and I guess you're going to have to move. And then I said, except for one little detail here, folks. What is the will of intent of this contract? Where is the disclaimer of knowledge? Title 42 of U.S.C. 1986. They never established that you guys are smart enough to understand what it was they were saying to you. They never disclosed the will of intent on the contract. Therefore, the contract was fraud. Just like when you walk through the gate of the bar. Unless there's a sign there saying that by entering this gate and entering the equity flag of our court, that you are surrendering all constitutional rights and that you give the authority of this judge to rule upon you, everything that takes place in that courtroom is a fraud because there's no disclaimer. UCC 3-501. Equity is under contract, and the will of intent must be proved. It is the intent, just like dropping that pen, that gravity is relevant. It is the intent that this contract will exist. But what was the will of the intent? What was the criminal activity going on in the state of mind of the judge and the attorney inside that bar to entrap the individual walking into that court? And if he wouldn't walk into court because he knew what the intent was, that's what they got the police there for, to grab him and drag him in. That's called collusion. And once the collusion has been established, they lose all jurisdiction. If you've lost jurisdiction, the individual dragging you into the courtroom is now guilty of kidnapping, which carries 20 years in prison. He's also guilty of assault, which carries a 3-year prison. And because he's got a gun on him, it's armed assault. That's 8 years. 8 years in Wisconsin anyways, I don't know what it is down here. But this here, these activities take place. The police officers now accosting you are guilty of kidnapping and assault. Now the judge and the attorney watching this take place under Title 42 U.S.C. 1986 fall victim to a Rodney King special. They have knowledge and negligence of a willful act that they just witnessed. They have lost jurisdiction, and any decisions they make before you now become actionable. Correct. So now these people that are creating these criminal acts lose all jurisdiction. The judge says, you squeak once, and you're going to jail. Not to use the word if. Now we got a nice solid collusion. Upon using this collusion, the judge has lost jurisdiction, and he then orders the bailiff to take you off to jail. But in that order, he commits a Title 18 U.S.C. 4, misprison of a felon. He acknowledged that he committed a crime, and yet had, and then in his silence, didn't correct it, and sent him to jail. Now you've got your attorney, who witnessed the judge. He's also guilty of a Title 18 U.S.C. 4, misprison of a felon. And together, they form a conspiracy. Title 18, U.S.C. 241, and a deprivation of rights, 242, and an extortion of rights, 872, with a racketeering rider on top of it because it's reduced you beyond the point of recovery. There's enough solid 35 years of prison right there for those little four. Then you get into your civil activities of a Title 18, Title 18, 1201, kidnapping, And because the judge ordered you to either pay a bond to get out of jail or pay a fine and enter into... No, that's ransom. It's ransom and extortion both. The extortion coming under... the extortion. Title 18, 452... No, 452 is... Postal Office.
We'll look it up.
No, 452 is Title 28, 452 is oath of office. And extortion...
872.
No, extortion is 872. 871, 872 is extortion, Title 18. And then your civil action is Title 42 U.S.C. 1986 for knowledge. Title 42 U.S.C. 1985, subsection 1 is conspiracy. Subsection 2 is obstructing justice, and subsection 3 is racketeering extortion under 83 conspiracy, under 85 conspiracy, then leading into a Title 42 U.S.C. 1983 personal injury. The personal injury comes under a policy and custom, because you can sit back there and watch these guys do it to everybody. And now you've got a person going to jail. The judge will not and did not give him a Fourth Amendment warrant. Without a Fourth Amendment warrant, the judge sends him to jail. Now he's committed a constitutional violation, also violating due process of law under the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendment. He didn't get a fair trial because all this extortion went on, so he's violated the Seventh Amendment. He told him to shut up, wouldn't allow him to produce his evidence before the court. He denied him his freedom of speech, First Amendment, and because he did that, he didn't allow him to produce his witnesses or his paperwork, which is his evidence. Now we got obstruction of justice, Title 18, 15, 12.
Yeah,
you're looking at when it 872, right? When you get it all done, it comes out to over 108 years of prison for the judge. And it's all done under an equity flag of treason.
Can we just move them out of the country so they keep them around that long?
But this is the kind of Pac-Man special we got here. Anybody touches it falls under it with knowledge. Yes.
I have a question. I listened to all of this, and it sounds great. As it happens,
we've got 750 cases in the court systems right now, all over the United States.
So this is a hypothetical case you're giving on this judge. You have cases where that judge could go.
Absolutely. And these are the cases that are being presented before the district courts all over the United States under common law, with the common law disclaimer and a flag put on the top of your paperwork. Now, when that happens, the judges have all been making the same statement. We need a more definitive statement. What's happened here now is they want you to establish subject matter. Without a Fourth Amendment warrant, using a preposition, noun, verb, it is a fact, but it is a fact. This here is a coffee cup. That's a fact, right? But if I drop it, the movement of time is also a fact. We are identifying a movement of time violation. It is not a physical fact that we can hold like a coffee cup, but a procedure of violation. And what can the Supreme Court hear? Two things. A statutory violation, which I just gave you, and a procedural violation. And the way the procedure is violated is that the due process of the law under the Fifth Amendment falls in all these different categories. And when you get those out of line, you violated the procedure. And the two of them now become qualified under the Court of Appeals, the United States Supreme Court, under a writ of error, E-R-R-O-R. And the Supreme Court has to take it because now you're charged with treason and perjury both. They've never been tested in the United States, and therefore they can't be dismissed. They have to go before the grand jury. Yes?
I could give him just a couple pieces of anecdotal evidence of ours.
Mm-hmm.
In early June of this year, filed one of these Title 42 suits into the U.S. District Court out in Oregon, and approximately 6 weeks later, the judge magistrate, who, by the way, virtue of the way we wrote this suit, should not have ever even put his hands on it.
Right, you disqualified the magistrate right out of the shotgun.
Right out of the barrel. Informed the plaintiff and the defendant there was going to be an oral hearing by telephone, a telephonic hearing.
the plaintiff in this particular case not knowing a great deal about the law came rushing over to me. We wrote up a little Q&A kind of thing for him to say and not say, more specifically, not say certain things over the phone. I can't give you my name. Well, the transcript from that hearing runs about 7 or 8 pages. In total length of time, probably wasn't longer than about 10 or 15 minutes. And that's all the time that it took for that judge magistrate to tell the world, I'm out of here. I'm not going to have anything to do with this case. I hope you all have a nice day. I'm sending it to calendar management. That was in June. Now October. No one will touch that case.
I'd like to expand on that for you. When we went ahead and put the statements on our paperwork that no jurisdiction of admiralty or maritime can be allowed in this case, every case in the United States is handled telephonically. Because they can't, if you come into the courtroom, you capture the flag, and you now have a common law court. They won't allow you to come in and capture the flag. Now, Statmiller is the chief judge in the 7th District of Wisconsin. When we got him on the phone, I told Carol, I said, we are going to establish jurisdiction before we talk about subject matter. Nothing will happen without jurisdiction. Because if you go in an admiralty jurisdiction, you've just shot yourself in the foot and the case is over. You've lost. They will sanction you for attorney fees and court costs and you'll go to jail for malice for 10 years if you don't establish jurisdiction. So we said, Mr. Carroll said, we have a title, he opens with, we have a Title IV USC 1 flag on our side of the phone. And I said, this is David Miller, and I concur, this is a Title IV USC 1 flag. And he says, who are you? I said, this is David Miller. He says, I know who you are.